Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and there is a lot for us to cover today. You know, the world of politics has really changed the way we live our lives. It's really now affecting us. When we think about our forefathers who created this government to be in the background of our lives, smaller government, the less involvement of the government in your life, the better. What they wanted to do was ensure that there was an equal opportunity for people to go out and be their best, achieve their most, whatever their God-given talents would give them, whatever their inspiration, their desire to succeed, whatever it would be, you'd be able to do it in America. We don't seem to see that anymore. You know, so when we look through what's going on in the world of politics, we need to really ask ourselves some fundamental questions here. And I've been stuck on this, I know, so, and I appreciate you all being here with me every weekday at 3 o'clock, is that what do we do with all this? How do we put this genie back in the bottle? We're seeing our friends on the left now. There are some moderate Democrats. There are just regular people that believe in doing things a little bit of a different way, a different philosophy than people on the right and the conservatives. But we also know there are a lot of people now on the left who really are radical Democrats, who really are socialists. And I hear them referred to as progressives. You know, progressive. They didn't like the liberal word. The liberal word used to bother people. When you called them liberals, they didn't want to be called liberals because that made them sound, I guess, too liberal. And they didn't think voters would like it, and voters didn't. But we had a different way of looking at the world back then. You know, now, liberal is not the negative term, I suppose, that it once was. Now it's a term that is mild, I guess, compared to socialist. But what else can you say that they believe in, if not socialism? And what's the next step after socialism but communism? And they're going that way. Look at Bernie Sanders, who's been openly socialist for years. Now we have AOC, who, for all intents and purposes, has a lot more power in the House of Representatives than her position really should afford her. But she does have a point of view that a lot of people believe in, that agree with, a lot of young people, a lot of people middle-aged who believe that socialism is a better way to go. So we're going to ask some questions today about socialism and where does it go. But I want to cover some other things first, because I'm really going to, I have some points here. And basically my point is this. In my pages of outrages here, I said, what would I do? What steps would I take if I wanted to take over the country? And I don't mean me, Joe Pangaro. I mean, in general, if I was a politician out there or the leader of a party and said, listen, we have to change everything about this country to change the trajectory of all this capitalism and freedom and get these people under control, you know, underneath a central state government that we will control, how would I go about doing it? So I made a list, and it's interesting to me, as I was making the list, I honestly thought I had maybe 3 or 4 points that I would be able to really articulate, but the list just poured out of me, not because I'm such a genius, but because I just looked around me and saw what's actually happening in the world today, how this is actually taking place, and we're going to get to that, right? So that's going to be a lot of what we talk about, but I wanted to go around the horn, see what's out in the news, and think about it a little bit and see where I think. So the crime is out of control in our country. There are shootings in many places that, you know, we saw last week in Texas. There was a shooting, I think it's the Yes Preparatory School, where a former student, 25-year-old man, arrived at the school, shot out the glass, went in, and then shot a principal who was in the building. He was taken into custody, but, you know, this happens. And when I talk about safety and security, one of the things I say to everybody is that if you have a facility where someone from the outside, an exterior threat, an external threat, somebody who wants to get into your facility, if you have a locked facility like a school, then what can we do to protect ourselves? Well, if we have glass that will just drop when somebody hits it with a hammer or shoots through it, then you have little to no protection whatsoever, because in this instance, he just hit the glass with a bullet and it dropped and he stepped right in. Very reminiscent, and sadly reminiscent of Sandy Hook School. When the killer showed up, he just dropped a couple rounds into the glass and the glass dropped. He was in the school immediately. You know, door locks didn't mean anything if you could drop the glass. So what is it you can do about that? Well, there's a product out there. It's called window glazing, window safety glazing. Lots of different companies make it. There's lots of different brands. Some are better than others. But what you do is you put this on your door and window glass, mostly at your entrances, but you can do every window. Some places do every window. And what it does is it bonds to the metal frame of the door with like a caulk. And what happens is it prevents the glass from dropping. Even if you shoot through it, the glazing, it's like a plastic film that goes on. It's crystal clear. If it's put on at night, you come to work the next day, you'd never even know it was on there. But it also comes in tinting. They can put logos on, whatever you want to do. But I always suggest to every location that's locked down, that's secure, that they put this on their front doors and windows. Because somebody my size, and I'm a big guy, if I came up to that door with a sledgehammer and I gave it a smash and it was unprotected, glass would just drop. I shoot a round through it and I'm in that building in a split second. But with this window glazing, it's so strong that I could shoot through it. You know, a bullet will go right through it. It's not bulletproof. But it keeps the glass from dropping. It holds it in place. So you'd have to shoot it multiple times to even get it to be able to be bending where you try and... It takes about 2 or 3 minutes for a guy my size. Again, I'm a big man. With a sledgehammer, 20-pound sledge, it'd probably take 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes to knock that glass out of the window. In that 2.5 minutes, you could lock down, you can call for help, you can do a lot of things. So the bullet might go through, but then you can't rip it open. You know, you can't stick your finger in a hole and rip it open. It that's how strong this stuff is. And like I said, made by lots of different companies. I'm not telling you a particular company, brand to buy. But I do know a company that puts this up. It's the Layer Company, A-L-A-Y-R, L-A-Y-R. They're out of New York. Really good guys. I met them on a couple of jobs that I was out, that I was already doing a threat assessment for a school district. And there they were putting this stuff in. And I was very, very pleased to see it, because that's always one of my recommendations. So if you have a facility that you want to be secured, a business, a religious facility, a school, and you want to give yourself some time to respond to an external threat, put this window glazing on there, and it helps to keep people, it buys you a couple of minutes so you can be safe and secure. And the reason I mentioned that is because in the article about this attack, they specifically said that the guy shot the glass out and stepped in, and that was really sadly reminiscent of the Sandy Hook School where he did the same thing. So that's just a thought on the shootings. The shootings are increasing with school coming back together. I've seen several school shootings already that have taken place. It's very, very sad. It's a strange thing that goes on in our nation. But also in Russia, have you noticed? The Russians are having a lot of these. They just had one the other day where 8 people were shot. 3-4 weeks ago, they had a school. The video was heartbreaking. All these middle school kids, there was a person in the building shooting up the school, and these middle school kids were jumping out of the second story windows of the school, you know, 2 floors up, so they could get away. It was really sad. And we know, statistically, between 10 and 16 of these events are going to take place every year here in the United States. So go to your school board, go to them and tell them, have they had a threat assessment? Do they even know what they're doing? Do they know where they're safe and where they're secure and when they're not? Right? And if they have any questions, they can reach out to Lieutenant Joe here. I can always answer those questions and help guide them. If you have a business and you have same questions, you know, most of the shootings that we see, a full 2/3 of active shooter events don't take place in our schools. They take place in our businesses, our places of recreation, other places, right? Commercial buildings, workplaces. So If you have a business or you work in a business, tell your owner, hey, did you get a threat assessment? Do we know where we're safe and secure? Do we train properly? And they can reach out to me and I'll try and help them. But that's in the news again. As we start to get together, we're going to see more and more the effects of this. And remember what I said a long time ago. Don't let people pull the wool over your eyes. Lieutenant Joe said this way back in March and April of 2020, that the PTSD we're all going to feel from shutdown, and at the time it was just a short shutdown, is going to come back to bite us, and that there's going to be a lot of latently violent people that this is going to affect, and we're going to have to deal with them. Well, now we've been shut down for a year and multiple months, and as we start to come out of this, it's going to be really, really terrible. So we got to get ready. We can survive it. We can prevent a lot of it with training. So just do the right thing, because we're seeing them more and more. When it comes to crime, there's something that's been on everybody's minds for a while here is the poor young lady from New York who living in Florida, Gabby Petito, who lost her life. She was murdered. We don't know who actually murdered her, although there is a person of interest, and that being her fiancé slash boyfriend, Brian Laundrie. Now, Brian is missing. Brian took off from his family's house in Florida after he came home from a trip that he went away with on Gabby, a van trip, and he came home without her. And a few days later, people started to wonder, well, where's Gabby? Gabby's parents were wondering, where's Gabby? Where's Brian? Well, Brian's home. Where's Gabby? Don't know. And he wouldn't say anything. It's his right not to incriminate himself. People are very angry with him and his parents for not coming forward and giving any information before they found Gabby's body, because they did find her body. She is deceased. And it has been declared a homicide. Not a natural death. It was a homicide. Somebody killed her. They haven't given a lot of information out on the exact manner of death, which is smart. That's a good part of an investigation. Because in a high-profile case like this, you will get people that will come forward and try and involve themselves in the case by saying they did it, or they know who did it, or they saw somebody do it, or whatever, because it's high profile and you get all this news media. But when I look at Gabby and I see this young girl, and there's video of a stop that the officers made, I think it's in Moab, Utah. They got stopped out there when apparently they were in the middle of a domestic violence argument. Now, anybody that's been in a relationship for any amount of time has been in a domestic violence argument. We all argue. We argue with the people we love, the people we care about. You know, we do these kind of things with them. And they normally don't turn violent. But I have to tell you that October is Violence Awareness Month, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, as well as Breast Cancer Month, right? Breast Cancer Awareness, you know, save the tatas, that kind of thing. But domestic violence is a huge problem, and the Gabby Petito case kind of points to that clearly, the problem we have with domestic violence. Now, I don't know who killed Gabby. We all have our suspicions. Obviously, Brian Laundrie is a person of interest. He was with her. He came home. He wouldn't say nothing about her. And in the meantime, before the police could question him, which was his right not to say anything, he disappeared. He took off from his family's house. And nobody really seems to have any idea where he is. I mean, he could be just about anywhere right now. So what does that say? Is that a indication of guilt that he took off? Well, I think a lot of people would say that is an indication of guilt, that this young man took off, disappeared, will not answer any questions. All right, it's certainly a possibility, and it's something we have to consider. Like I said, a lot of people were very upset, and still are, that Brian would not come forward and give any information about Gabby, that his parents wouldn't offer any information to help find her. Now there's a charge against him. They're charging him with something. The purpose of charging him with something is so that they can arrest him when they find him, right? The first time they saw him around at his parents' house, they had nothing to arrest him for. She was just missing. She certainly could have taken off with somebody else. She could have left him. She could have done all kinds of things that were not homicidal. But, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves. We kind of get it, that there's something bad happened, but he had a right not to speak about it. And that is his constitutional right. How frustrating is that? You know, people were just begging him, just Brian, just tell us where she is. Come forward and tell us where she is. And that's all understandable, of course. If that was my daughter, I would be so upset that he wouldn't do anything to help. But there's a lawyer here in the Northeast, and I don't know his name. And he's advertising, and he talked about Brian Laundrie. He says, it's Brian's absolute right not to speak, and he doesn't have to do this and that. And that's he's constitutionally protected. And that's all true. And then he says, and remember, if you're charged with a crime, you don't have to speak either, which I found to be a disgusting use of this particular case, because this young lady is dead. And this attorney is making a good point to tell future killers and crime breakers that they don't have to talk either. You know, effective commercial, I would think, if you're a criminal and you hear that. But disgusting in the fact that to use this particular death of this young lady to sell your services. I think the point I want to make here about this and any other crime like this, because this is Domestic Violence Month, is that the videotape of the officers, that's come under scrutiny now. In that videotape, we see Gabby very, very upset. She's she almost seems manic. She talks about that she's excitable and that she was, she has OCD and she gets herself very caught up into things. And Brian seemed very calm at the same time. Now, the officers immediately assumed that she was crying and upset because he did something to her. That's a natural thing. You see the guy and the girl fighting, the girl's crying. He must have done something, right? She turns out saying that she hit Brian, that she was upset with him. And when the police lights lit up, she hit him like, look, oh, now you're getting pulled over, you idiot, because of this. And what were the officers to do? Now, I know in many states, the bottom line for making an arrest in a domestic violence, because it used to be domestic violence, whether it was husband and wife, spouses, boyfriend, girlfriends, horrific crimes took place, beatings, all kinds of assaults on each other. And cops would call that, that was a personal matter. That was a family matter. And they didn't make an arrest. They might say to the victim, who's beat up, bloody, and smashed, do you want to sign a complaint? And they would always say no, for many reasons. Number one, they didn't want to do it. Number two, they were afraid if they did it, what the person would do to them, etc., etc. In this case, the officers hear that she hit him. Well, there's another tape where she says that he slapped her. Now, the guiding line here is normally if you can see a mark on the victim, if you see a indication that someone was hit, right? So if I punch somebody in the face, you're going to see an indication, right, that they were hit. You're going to see a black eye. You're going to see a bloody nose. You're going to see a fist print in the side of somebody's face. If you choke somebody, you'll see their neck is all red, and you can tell. And in most states, because officers didn't normally make arrests back in the day, they changed the laws to say we have to protect the victims of domestic violence who often will not come forward and make complaints or whatever because they're afraid of what's going to happen. So therefore, they're intimidated away from protecting themselves. So the officers, if you see a mark on a victim, then you are to make an arrest. Right? It's taken it out of the officer's hand. You see a mark on somebody and you can attribute it to the domestic violence incident, you make an arrest of the perpetrator, and then they go to court. Now, what's frustrating for law enforcement officers is that they'll make an arrest, they'll do all the paperwork, do the best they can to make a good case, and when they get to court, the victim often has reconciled with the person that hit them. They have a family together. They have a life together. Maybe they really do love each other and it got out of control. And they want to drop the charges. They don't want to proceed. They won't testify. You can't make them testify. And therefore, the case gets dropped. And then a week later, you're back at the same house again with the exact same incident and you're arresting somebody again. So it gets very frustrating for police officers. What I try and tell them, what I try and tell police officers is that this is such a unique thing, domestic violence, that you may have to go to the same house five times and arrest people, and five times the victim will drop the charges. But maybe that sixth time, if they don't get murdered in the course of it, that sixth time, that victim might decide to break the chain and get away. save themselves, maybe save their children, whatever. And if you go there with an attitude, you're not helping the victim. So we have to go there and let them know there's alternatives. We support you. We're doing the right thing. It's our job, but we're also doing the right thing, because you never know, that moment will come when that victim will decide, I've had enough, and this time I want to get away. So you have to do the right thing every single time. In the case of Gabby and Brian, speculation is easy. You know, they obviously got into some kind of an argument. Initially, when the story came out, what did they say? They were engaged, and then they broke up their engagement because they didn't think they were ready to get married. All right, they're young people. They're, 21, 22 years old? That can cause a lot of friction. Was there someone else involved in the relationship? Did Gabby want to date somebody else? Did Brian want to date somebody else? Who knows? Now you add all those human emotions, and I have no idea that any of that was involved, but obviously there was some problems in the relationship, and then this poor young lady ends up dead. Somebody killed her. So when we see our friends, our family members, or anybody struggling with this kind of a relationship, we have to offer alternatives. We have to give them an option. We have to do what we can to try and help them, no matter how difficult it is, because Gabby should be alive today. She should be with her family and her friends. She should be able to do what she's going to do, but her life was cut short, most likely from a domestic violence incident that went too far. You know, so I just want to say a prayer for Gabby and her family. And Brian, wherever you are, you know, we can all hope that you turn yourself in to face the music, answer the questions or whatever. I don't know that he will. We now have Dog the Bounty Hunter, you know, from TV. He's out there trying to make way. You know, we could talk about the investigation and did the police all do the right thing? That'll all be determined. You know, should the officers in Moab done more? Should they have taken him into custody? I don't know. I wasn't there. I only saw the videotape and heard the story. You really have to be there to see the whole entire thing. But very, very difficult, and I'm very sorry. And I want to talk about this case a couple weeks ago. It's one of the difficult things we have to deal with when you're out there in law enforcement. Okay, so what else is going on? What else is going on with situations that seem unreasonable? And maybe violent, or could be. How about Senator Sinema from Arizona? Now, she is a Democrat. She was elected to the Senate the last time around, and she gets out there, and apparently she's a moderate Democrat. She's not a crazy left-wing radical socialist. She's a moderate Democrat. At least that's how she seems. Every time I've seen her speak, she seems to be of good mind, you know, just doing things differently than I would do. But she is being attacked along with Senator Joe Manchin, another Democrat from West Virginia, because they will not go along with AOC's radical Green New Deal of $5 or $7 trillion they want to spend on all these social programs and socializing our country. So much so that Joe Manchin came out the other day. He must be getting terrible pressure at home with the people who in West Virginia are more conservative than they are liberal, obviously. And he got elected anyway, and he came out and he says, I'm not a liberal. I've never been a liberal. I'm not like that. If the progressives want to do their progressive stuff, they got to get more liberals, but I'm not a liberal. He was trying to make the case that, hey, I'm not a radical, fire-breathing socialist like the rest of my party, because he wants to keep his job in West Virginia. But he's also refusing to go along with this $3 to $5, $7 trillion, whatever the hell it is. You know, when you add it all up, isn't it funny? When AOC came out with her Green New Deal several years ago, she said it would be $10 trillion of spending they would need. And everybody laughed. $10 trillion? You got to be out of your mind. If they passed this, they'd be up around $7 trillion. And then you know there'd be another package, another couple of, and they would get their $10 trillion, but it wouldn't stop there. And the whole idea, I believe, is that to spend so much money, we are going to bankrupt our country. We're going to cause problems in our economy. And I think that's the idea. That allows central government to come in and take over. And that is the ultimate aim of the socialists. So I don't think we should call them progressives anymore. I think we should be honest with the label. I think we should call them socialists. Because they are socialists. They don't deny it. They don't run away from that term. They believe socialism is better, so we should call them socialists. I think it makes the argument easier to keep. But anyway, excuse me, Senator Sinema, she's a college professor, and she was teaching at, I think, the University of Arizona. And she's given her class, and a student in the class starts to jump on the political bandwagon and starts to berate her for not being part of Joe Biden's Build Back Better plan and doing what Joe Biden wants to do and spend these trillions and trillions of dollars. Well, at some point, I don't know how she calmed her down or she stopped the discussion in her classroom. Senator Sinema left and she went to the ladies' room to go to the bathroom. And this student and probably several others turned on their cameras, followed her into the bathroom, and began berating her, stalking her in the bathroom about why she will not go along with amnesty for all of the people in our country, the illegal aliens, why she will not go along with the spending, and really, not physically, but verbally assaulting her. And Senator Sinema comes out, she's outraged that this type of protest has no place in our lives. Well, where was she, let me ask her, where was she last year when protests included looting businesses and attacking people in the street and blocking people's cars and dragging them out of cars and beating them and destroying public property? Where was she last year when this kind of protest was inappropriate? But when it affects her, suddenly there's no place for this kind of protest, chasing people down and confronting them. Really? Welcome to the party, Senator Sinema. There is no place for that kind of protest. People have a right to make their voice heard. I agree. But not when it comes to violence, chasing people down, intimidating them. That's not appropriate in any way, shape, or form. My question to Senator Sinema and Joe Manchin is that you're trying very, very hard to maintain your credentials as a non-fire-breathing, crazy, radical, socialist liberal. Why not just jump the ship and come over to the Republican Party and be a moderate Republican? Then you don't have to worry about $3 trillion spending bills. And you don't have to worry about what to do with illegal aliens and open borders and things that affect your states. Join the Republican Party, change the majority, and then you'll be able to do something about it. You'll have people that will appreciate you more anyway. Because look how fast they turned on you because you don't agree with them. Right? So I just wanted to bring that up. I want to bring that particular idea up is that, you know, what's that old saying from, and I again, I wish I had the specifics of it, but when they came for the painters, I said nothing and they took them away. And then they came for, and I'm using different, you know, different groups of people here. And then they came for the electricians and I said nothing and they took them away. And then finally they came to take me away and there was no one to say anything. This is what's happening. And this is why there's infighting in that party, because the socialists now have a taste of power. There's blood in the water and they think they have control because Nancy Pelosi cannot control them. She's afraid she's going to get thrown out of her job. Chuck Schumer, the leader of in the Senate, he can't do anything because AOC is threatening to run for his job, and then he's out. So they're appeasing them, trying to keep control on their party. And in the meantime, the party is just completely changed. It is now a socialist party. We now have big choices here in America. And what I've said all along is that many, many people, many family and friends of mine who are on the left, who are liberals, are good and decent people. They only want the best for everybody. They have a different way of going about it. They see things differently than I particularly do and that other people do. I see other better ways to get to the places we want to be. But I don't see them as bad or evil. I see them as misinformed, maybe not really understanding how people really function in the real world. But I don't see them as bad. People like AOC and these crazy socialists, socialism is bad. It is not good for us. It's not good for people. It's not good anywhere it's been tried. And I know the mantra is, well, if we just tried it our way, if we just gave it enough money, it would be. It will never, ever work because It goes against human nature. It goes against human nature. Now, human nature is good and bad. Socialism goes against the good of human nature, the desire to achieve, the desire to better yourself, the desire to lift your family to a better place, because it controls everything you do, how much money you make and everything. It's also difficult on the bad side is that it wants power. It wants to increase power and go after power. And that is why we have such difficulty. So I want to think about that. We're going to be back in a minute. And we have a lot more to talk about here, but I just wanted to see, you know, where we're going with this socialism, and Senator Sinema got a taste of them turning on her, just like the socialists will turn on all of us if they get the opportunity. This is Lieutenant Joe with Chasing Justice. I'll be back in a minute.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. Now, before we get into this, you know, in the last segment, we were covering a couple of things, and I was talking about the creep of socialism and how it's really going to hurt all of us, and it's got a lot of power now. Don't kid yourself. The people on the left and those who want to be socialists, we might see them. Those who are of us who are conservatives, we can see them coming. We know what they're all about. We know what socialism does. But there's a lot of people in our country that are having the wool pulled over their eyes, who just seem to see this whole, it'll be much more fair, it'll be a safer place, it'll be right, everyone will have what they need, and the rich will get punished, and they will have to pay. This, people really believe these things more than you think they do. You know, when you see these polls that 40%, 45% of people, young people, think socialism is the best way to go, and that over 50% of people of all ages think it would be more fair if we were socialists, we are heading down that road, and it may be too late. It may already be too late. I mean, the next couple of elections are really going to tell. In 2022, if the elections are not stolen, if they're not frauded, you know, by all this mail-in balloting nonsense and all that, if they're not frauded away, it seems to me there's no way that the Republicans cannot retake the House and add to their Senate majority. I mean, add to it and get a Senate majority because of what's going on. The inflation is out of control. The cost of things is, wait till you start paying as the winter comes along and you have to pay for heating oil. You know, we've been used to this $2 a gallon heating oil. Well, it's going to $4 and $5 a gallon, and it's going to hurt. It's a tax. See, you know, anybody less than $400,000 is not going to pay any new taxes. No, they're not going to raise your taxes in numbers on your tax return. Everything else you do is going to cost you in a big way. So if it used to cost you, oh, you had a 20 gallon tank in your car, and it cost you $60 a week to fill your car, and now it's $3, $3.50, you're almost doubling that. maybe 75 or 80 bucks a week. Well, that's a tax on you. The food, when you used to buy a steak and it was $5 and now it's $12, that's a tax on you, right? That's coming right out of your pocket that you have no control over it. So all of these things cost us money. And if people don't have their eyes open to realize what is the big difference besides the big nasty orange man tweeting that nobody liked, what is the difference between the big nasty orange man and our friends on the left who now have control over everything in our country? Well, obviously the difference is policy, is beliefs, deciding how to make things happen. What's going to be the driving force in our country? We had energy independence under Donald Trump. We didn't have to buy fuel from anyone. Now Joe Biden is begging OPEC to please increase the output and, you know, cut your profits so that we can have cheaper gas. Please, can you do that? We had energy independence. Why did we give it away? That's policy change. We had a booming economy. Now, of course, COVID stepped in the way, but we could certainly go back to that because it was the policies, the tax policies, the regulations that we cut down so that businesses could function. And what happened? There was more jobs than we could have. People were making money. Everything was going really, really well. Well, things are not going really well now. We are in a mess economically. All right? Our military was very, very strong. They are one of the backbones of freedom and liberty. Now, it's not the men and women who are in the military, but it's the political leadership is a train wreck. They got political, and you saw what happened. We left Afghanistan. We pulled the troops out before we got our people out. And we left American citizens and allies behind to face the Taliban by themselves. Have we heard our president, Joe Biden, talk about that? No, he turned the page on and he moved on. Oh, well, those Americans are gone. Although they told us they wouldn't leave anybody behind. And then they did. So when you add up this and many, many more things that are going on, it's not about people and who they are, who's evil, who's not evil. It's about policy and left-wing socialist policies that have a lot of control and will have a lot more control in the coming years if they pass these budgets, are driving us into the ground. You can already see it happening. How about that $5 steak that's now $12 being $35? That's coming. And then you know what? There won't be enough steak. Farmers won't be able to raise the cattle. You'll see shortages on everything else. I was in a food store the other day, and there was a young man, a young butcher, and he was talking to, there was some guy and his wife there, asking about Thanksgiving turkeys. And the guy says, yeah, we have a big order in, but they're kind of behind. If you see a turkey, you should buy it right away because there's going to be shortages of everything for Thanksgiving. Okay? This is what's coming our way. And my bigger point is that if our friends in this country, our relatives, our citizenry does not see the damage that left-wing radical policies do, then there is no hope for us. If they don't vote opposite of these policies come 2022, then you get the government you deserve. I believe Jefferson said that. You'll get the government you deserve. And if we vote for this stuff, then it's what we deserve. And that's, I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. I'm at a loss. I vote policy because I see how policies work. I didn't like some of the tweets of President Trump. I didn't like some of the things. But you know what? The country was doing well. Everybody was doing well. We were safe and secure. Yeah, the other nations, boy, they were angry with us because of the way he talked to them. Yeah, he made them pay their NATO bill. He made them pay for part of what they owed us to do the right thing. He held people to account. And you know what? People don't like that. So they get angry. Well, what do we see now? All right, French President Macron comes out the other day and says he hoped that this American wokeism doesn't come to France because it's all negative, it's all bad, and it will damage the lives of the French. And he doesn't want American wokeism to come to France. The rest of the world is seeing, under Joe Biden, a crumbling of American influence, power, culture, and place in the world. I see it. I know a lot of you see it. And it's not because we hate anybody. It's because we see what policies do, right? And how do you get people to vote for these policies that are destroying us? You make good cases that it's goodness, it's niceness, it's good wonderfulness, it's fairness, it's the right thing. And in the meantime, it's none of those things. It is simply a power grab, and people are being used. They are being used to advance certain people's careers and power at the detriment of all of us. And I know, like I said, my family and friends that are on the left, I pray that they open their eyes and see this, because it's not just me saying it now. When I say, oh, policies make a difference, they go, yeah, but this is going to be much more fair. And then they see it ain't so fair. Then they see the economy's crashing, and they see their money is disappearing. Then they see the cost of everything is going way up for them. How can they not realize what it is? That it's policy. And the policies of the left are detrimental to the lives of Americans. It's as simple as that. Okay? So who did I want to talk about? Justice Clarence Thomas. I want to talk about him for a couple of minutes. I think Justice Thomas has now acquitted himself over a lifetime career on the Supreme Court as one of the most brilliant men in America. Now, a lot of people disagree with his policy and how he sees things. But the reality is, you can say what you want. I don't see Justice Thomas as a black justice. I see him as an American Supreme Court justice. Why? Because his beliefs and his policies are pure American. He stands for America and the Constitution. He's not a black man who stands for the Constitution. He's a man who stands for the Constitution. See, because I don't see color, right? Our friends on the left see color. I don't see color. I see a man. And I see a man I agree with most of the time, because he's a good and decent man, and he loves the Constitution, and he sticks to the Constitution, right? Just like we're seeing John Roberts go the other way. John Roberts is a man I thought would have been a great justice, but it looks like he's slipping over to the liberal side. He votes with the liberals a lot of times. He's going to hurt our country and our Constitution. And I don't know why, but I know Clarence Thomas was maligned as he came into the office. He was lied about. He was attacked, all unjustly. But he has acquitted himself beautifully over these past 20 so years that he has been a Supreme Court justice. He is a man to look up to. He is a man to be grateful for. His intellect, his character. He is a wonderful, wonderful American. And I wanted to mention him today. Because he's starting to, you know, the court started its next session. And apparently the way they used to do things is they asked random questions, just screamed them out from the bench. And he didn't like that style, apparently. Now they've gone to a style where they go in seniority, asks direct questions, and when they're done, they move on. He likes that better, and he's engaging much more. And they're talking about him a lot. And I think I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that, because Clarence Thomas is a great man. Okay? So let me think of another great American that I want to talk about. Tony Bennett. Now, I am a fan of Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith, most new Metallica stuff. I'm also a fan of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I like marching bands. I like classical music. I love jazz. I have lots of tastes in music that I like, that I really enjoy. But I love, you know, the crooners and the singers from the 40s and the 50s. Frank Sinatra is one of my favorites. And Tony Bennett is probably one of the greatest American singers. Just always seemed like a good and decent man. His voice is absolutely beautiful. A couple years ago, my son Joe got me a Christmas tape. And it was Tony Bennett sings the Christmas. And it's beautiful. I play it every year. It's such a wonderful voice. Unfortunately, you know, he's suffering with Alzheimer's, 95. He has now stopped touring. But some of his most recently really cool things he did is that he toured and recorded with Lady Gaga. Now, Lady Gaga, you could say what you want about her politics. Just like I said, with all of these singers. You know, who was it? Laura Ingraham years ago wrote a book, Shut Up and Sing, where all these musicians want to come out and voice their politics. And who the hell cares what they think? Let's just sing. We like your voice. We like your music. We just want to hear your music. So Lady Gaga, I think, you know, she was bullied when she was young. I think I heard that about her background. I think she's an amazing singer. Her politics, I don't know if I care too much about her politics. But I like her songs, and I think she sings beautifully. When I heard Lady Gaga doing duets with Tony Bennett a few years ago, it was I don't want to say amazing. How many times can you say amazing? It was beautiful. It was wonderful. Her voice and his voice just melded together. It was a delight to listen to. And, you know, she did one of her last concerts with Tony Bennett. He is now retired from singing publicly because obviously the Alzheimer's got him. And, you know, I just wanted to think about him, too. You know, there's enough people we could be upset with. I think Tony Bennett is an amazing American, and I like his voice, and I love his music. And I'm very sorry that he has Alzheimer's, just like lots of other people in our country are suffering from Alzheimer's. You know, one of my friends that comes on here in the neighborhood is Jim Giordano. You know, Jim and I have been friends for a long time. We tease a lot with Jim, you know, on the show. He is, we call him, you know, the difficult one, because he'll make an argument about anything. You know, you say the sky is blue, he says it's dark blue. You say there's stars in the skies, he wants the exact number of stars. He's the contrarian. He always takes the opposite side of an argument. Sometimes he does it just to stir the pot. I mean, that's just Jimmy's personality. He likes to stir the pot and get controversy going. Sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's not, and he knows the difference and he does it. But I wanted to mention him and his wonderful wife, Marisa, who are very good friends of Kathleen and I. And we spend a lot of time together. Well, Marisa recently lost her father. Her father passed away after suffering with Alzheimer's for years, where the poor man didn't know anyone in his life. He was just living to be alive, not really living a life. And he was called home by our Lord God, which I hope gives him some peace, restores some sense of, I don't even know what, to the family, that his suffering is over. But I just wanted to mention that Jim's father-in-law has passed, and he was a good man, just like lots of people out there with Alzheimer's. So if you or anybody in your family is suffering from Alzheimer's, it's a terrible disease, and we should be really looking at that, because it can strike anybody anytime. But Tony Bennett, good man. He's fallen victim to it, and so is Jim's father-in-law. And you know what? Looks like so is Joe Biden. I don't want to make a joke out of it, but that's kind of what's going on. Maybe you were a hero. Maybe during all this pandemic, you were a hero. You're a doctor. You're a nurse. You're an EMT. You're a cop. You're a firefighter, whatever. And you worked through this pandemic. You served others when other people were sitting at home collecting unemployment, not able to go out and do anything. You were superstars. We all loved you and appreciated you, which is really wonderful. I think that's what should have been. You did an amazing thing, all of you essential workers. My friend Yankee Doodle Keith works in a food store, and he worked through the pandemic. He did not take the unemployment. He kept working. He is a hero. He's an American hero, like all of the people who worked through this pandemic. But what about the people we're firing now? These same heroes went from heroes to zeros because they wouldn't take the vaccine. We see New York is firing thousands of nurses and school teachers who refuse to take the vaccine because they have a religious concern about it, because it's made from or it's tested with fetal cells. So they have a religious concern. They're not sure how healthy it is. I saw the other day, aren't we glad that we're not on social media where I could be censored for saying things that I heard? Oh my gosh, because it's false information. Well, the CDC said the vaccine doesn't stop you from getting COVID. What, isn't that what a vaccine is supposed to do? I take it so I don't get the disease. It doesn't prevent you from getting it. It doesn't prevent you from giving it. But if you have it and you get it, you'll probably survive it much better than someone who doesn't have the vaccine and gets it. This is convoluted. This is absolutely convoluted. Now, I know there's lots of people, medical people, that will tell you, how come we haven't talked about treating this? I've never heard of anything about treatment, although there's lots of doctors out there that talk about treatment and they get banned. There's no treatment. There's no treatment. There's only a vaccination. That's it. There's no treatment.
Well, there is treatment. Ivermectin. Ivermectin is not, horse dewormer. Ivermectin is a award-winning medication that helps people who get viruses, right? So you take ivermectin, you take zinc, you take a bunch of other things, and you treat the COVID when you get it, and your chances of survival go way up. But we're not allowed to talk about treatment. There is no treatment plan. There's nothing. There's, if you don't feel well, stay home and suffer with the COVID. Maybe not go on a ventilator. That would be good if that works out for you. Oh, now there's the vaccine. You better take it. And they're firing thousands of people. I think we're going to lose this battle, ladies and gentlemen, because our corporations don't have the ability to fight the government. They don't have the ability to be, what are they, 5,000 or 14,000 a day, corporations with over 100 employees who don't make everyone get vaccinated or fire them, 14,000 a day in fines. Well, companies can't withstand that, so they're capitulating. They're giving in to the power of government. Now, I understand the idea. If this vaccine, if we knew all the facts about it, see, that's the thing, we don't know all the facts about it. We're not allowed to ask, and people who know about it are not allowed to tell us. Now, we've been over this thousands of times as well. This is something new in history. This is a symptom of a bigger problem that we have. Why does this seem so political? Why does a vaccine seem so damn political? Right? If you don't get it, you're going to lose your job. Isn't it up to you? If I'm vaccinated, shouldn't I be safe from the unvaccinated? Well, no, because I could still get it. Yeah, but I'll survive, so that doesn't matter, should it? It's the unvaccinated who might die. Well, if that person doesn't want to get it and take the chance that they're going to die, shouldn't we just leave them alone? They can get it from the vaccinated. Well, that's a chance you might be willing to take. You have a right to take that choice. What happens next when the government comes up with a breast cancer vaccine that everyone has to take? Because you know what? Breast cancer is very expensive, costs us a lot of money, a lot of people die. But there's this vaccine now, and we're saying everyone has to take it. Everyone has to take it, you know, because anyone, men and women, can get breast cancer. So therefore, we have this new vaccine, you have to take this vaccine. Well, you realize if we let them do this one, there's no stopping them. They can then come up with a vaccine for anything they want and tell you you have to take it. That is part of the argument. I'm not a non-vaxxer. My children are all vaccinated for everything. I'm vaccinated for everything. I'm concerned about this one. You know, you're not allowed to hear stories about people who have a hard time with it. My younger son went round and round before college to decide to get it. And we made a decision that it's his life. And we gave him all the information. And I can't tell him not to get it. And he got vaccinated. Well, I saw a story the other day about a young man who just went off to college. And basically, his parents made the same choice. They said, listen, we don't think you should get it. We don't know enough about it. We think you should wait, try and get an exception. And the young man said, nope, I want to go. I want to go to college unfettered. I want to be able to participate. I don't want people bothering me. I'll take the shot. Well, he got the shot. He started not feeling well, and he got the inflammation of his heart. There's a name for it. It comes with certain ones of the vaccines. Inflammation of his heart. Now he's laying in a hospital dying. Now, oh, he's just, Lieutenant, he's just one out of the millions and millions of people that got, well, what if he's your kid? What if he's your kid? It's okay? Your kid can go? Right? Your kid's okay to sacrifice. What if you didn't want him to have it and he didn't want to have it, but he felt pressured he had to have it, and now he's laying there dying? How about we pressure everybody out there to do what they don't want to do just because we're in power? How would people like that? Do you see where we're going here, ladies and gentlemen? This government by and for the people, do you really think you're in charge anymore? Do you really think the government you're supposed to be in charge of and the government works for you, do you really think it works that way? Can you fight the government in any way? No. We are now living exactly what our forefathers were worried about. This is exactly the times that our forefathers were worried we would be living in. Because this is the default position of mankind, to have government and the strong man take over and everyone else do what you say, or you'll face a penalty. If you don't take our vaccine, no matter what you believe, your religious exemption, we don't trust, we don't agree with your religious exception. Oh, really? I saw one guy in New York, he put in for a religious exception, and he got it until November 15th. By then, you have to be vaccinated. Another guy came in and said he had heart problems, he had lung problems, he had this and that. His doctor says you shouldn't take this shot. He says, my doctor said, okay, we'll give you an extra 30 days, and then you have to take the shot. What the hell is that? That's where we are now. That's where we are now.
Okay, I'm going to change the tone real quick before I go into what I would do if I was going to take over things. A couple of years ago, I got very annoyed with the kneelers in football. Not because I didn't understand they had a grievance and they have a right to speak their grievance. Because I didn't think they understood that by kneeling and they think they're making a statement about how they feel about the country and their own experience, but that it offended a lot of people who the flag and the national anthem stood for a lot more things, stood for a lot of very important things in their life, people who sacrificed, people who died for this country. And that was an insult to those people. Not that we weren't willing to listen to people's grievances, just not that. And the only way to make a stand against that, I said, I'm not going to watch anymore. And I didn't for a couple of years. I didn't watch at all, though I love football. I didn't watch for a couple of years because I just was so annoyed by that. And I think I told you this story. I had a revelation one day. There was a group of players who were standing, and they were, you know, standing for the national anthem with their hand over their hearts. And there was people kneeling all around them. And I said, you know, those guys are doing the right thing, and I'm not supporting them. I'm hurting them because I'm annoyed with the other people. So you know what? I'll watch again. And yes, he had served my purpose because I like football, but I was willing to give it up for the principle. But I realized that I'm not supporting the guys who were standing. So I started watching football again. And I'm glad I did. You know, last year was a magical year in sports because sports are just, they should be anti-political. They're just about greatness and doing your best. And Tom Brady was an amazing story last year. You know how a guy was the greatest that we've ever seen play. And he leaves one team, goes to another, takes them to the Super Bowl, and wins. Well, recently, Tom Brady and his team in this season got to go back to New England and play against his former team, the Patriots. And it was really billed as an amazing game. It's going to be... Well, if you watch the game, it was an amazing game. The new quarterback for the Patriots, Mac Jones, absolutely amazing young man. Going to be a superstar. You can see it already if you don't get hurt. Another Tom Brady coming out of Belichick's factory. But the end of the game, Brady and the Buccaneers win by a couple of points. And what I thought was amazing and endearing and was really great was to see almost every one of the Patriots players come up to Tom Brady, who had just beaten them, and hug him and wish him luck, tell him he was the greatest. And then you watched Tom Brady respond to each one of these people, telling them how great they were, what a great game it was. It was a thrilling thing to see such decency in sports. That it didn't matter if you were black or white. You went up and you showed your respect to this great player, and he responded with love and respect for you too. And it was amazing to watch that, just to see player after player after player from his former team that he had just beaten in this big rivalry, including Coach Belichick, come up and give him a big hug. It was really a wonderful thing. And if you had a chance to see it, you would have enjoyed it. Now listen, before I go, real quick, I'm going to tell you about Healthy Cell. My cousin, who had a problem sleeping, I gave him the Healthy Cell REM sleep. He reports to me 2 weeks later, he's sleeping like a baby. Give it a try, Healthy Cell. See you next time down the road here on Chasing Justice.